Good evening, esteemed guests and administrators of the Board of Education West Covina Unified School District. We are opening, call to order the meeting of the Board of Education June 8th, 2010, and we will, we are going to adjourn to closed session. Is there anybody that would like to comment on items before us in closed session? Hearing none, we will now close this meeting to closed session.
I'd like to call this meeting of the Board of Education to order. We return from closed session where we talked with public employee discipline, dismissal, release, transfer, appointment, conference with labor negotiators, and conference with legal counsel or staff over anticipated litigation. We have an invocation. Is there anyone that would like to offer the invocation that's here tonight? Then I will go ahead and offer it, and the flag salute will be offered by Mr. Steve Cox. Please stand. Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we're grateful as we gather here as the West Covina Unified School District Board of Trustees for this district, and we're grateful for the staff and the students, and as we come to the end of the school year, we're grateful for the year that we've had and the sacrifices that have been made to help the education here in West Covina. We're grateful for the parents of those students and those we recognize tonight and at the end of the year for the many accomplishments. We ask a blessing on this meeting that will be a productive one, and we say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please join me in a salute to our flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Here.
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 We have no activity report from closed session. We're on presentations, number six.
Good evening, everyone. We would like to take this opportunity to recognize the West Cove PTA for their 50th anniversary and ask all the PTA parents to please come forward and receive our grateful applause. At this time, I would like to call forward the principal of Edgewood Middle School, Mark Trovatore. Please come forward. Thanks to Mr. Trovatore, we have entered a new era of academic competition, and Edgewood Middle School for the last few years has competed very well at the academic pentathlon, and we'd like to recognize the coaches and students. So would the coaches please come forward, Brooks Atherton, Craig Michael, Roxanne Crawford, Elizabeth Tron, and Aaron Bauer. All right, students. Students, you're going to come forward too. Team A.
We actually have two other coaches that represent our sixth grade pentathlon team, Mrs. Ellen Bezaire and Ms. Laurette Sauter.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, we want you right there, front and center, to the hardworking teachers. Okay, I'm going to ask the students to also join, starting with Team A, V. Tontu, Angela Shea, and Catherine Nguyen. Team B, Dylan Matia, Lillianne Pham, and Kimberly Quinteros. Team C, Kayla Castillo and Marco Lopez. 7th graders, Matt Anderson, Alessandra Avancena, Adam Hogue, Rebecca Lisberg, Mike Liu, Gabby Musquez, Wilson Pan, Nathan Siltutga, Thomas Stapleton, Justin Tran, Cecilia Vu, and Lisa Witherspoon. Eighth grade, David Agosto, Jeremy Castillo, Chantel Shan, Nate Martinez, Isabel Nguyen, Austin Perea, Ray Kwai, Kaitlin Megan Rivera, Ramiro Salazar, and Stefan Wu. Mr. Trovatore, Board President Mike Spence is going to give you the certificates for all of our students. And so if you two would get in the picture and take at least one and hand it over. Just at least one. Although everybody's getting one, including the coaches, because we really appreciate it.
You want to get the picture first?
Yeah, maybe we'll do that first.
I'm going to walk you up in the picture. Over here so you can cut me out.
All right, a big round of applause for everybody.
Just a few brief remarks. I just want to kind of put this in context, what these kids and the coaches have achieved together. This is only the third year we've competed, and there is no pentathlon event in San Gabriel Valley. So our coaches had to kind of vet out an event somewhere, which ended up being in Orange County. So just to kind of put this in context, the first year we took home, I think, 33 medals, which was phenomenal considering that was the first year. So I did task and challenge the team with doubling or tripling that. They answered, and last year we brought home 110 medals. Now, well, it gets better. So because we did so well, they said, well, we need to move you up into another category. So the bar was raised, and they responded with vigor and came home with 91 medals this year. So now you say, well, didn't they go from 110 to 91? Well, remember, went up to a higher caliber, and we fielded two teams instead of three. So per capita, we actually brought home more medals. So that's exemplary. And lastly, you just have to understand the amount of time these coaches and students dedicate to this. It's, if you know anything about academic decathlon at the high school, academic pentathlon, remember, these kids, this isn't their only pursuit. They're in sports. They're in ASB leadership, other things. And I don't know how they find the time to do all this and maintain high GPA. So again, and the credit also goes to the coaches because they dedicate countless hours, and these kids are there till, I shouldn't say how late they're there, but late at night type of thing. And of course, our coaches have families as well that they've sacrificed. So again, one more round of applause, please, to what they've done. It's amazing.
On behalf of the board, I want to thank you students and, of course, the parents and the staff for representing the academic excellence of Westview Unified. We appreciate it very much, and so congratulations, and we'll take a short few-minute break so the rest of the board can come and congratulate you. Thank you.
You're allowed to move, yeah. But you can't leave quite.
Yeah, I guess maybe.
I want to recognize one of you guys. Where are you? Cecilia was able to get a score of highest points overall in her Division II second grade, and she was not able to get an award at the pentathlon event because of the fact that they had, she was on the alternate list. But she got the higher points of anybody else.
Wow.
Wow.
This award.
Yay.
I know.
Right here, they're going to have the hearing session, board's report. This is usually pretty short, and then it's items from the floor, public comment, and he'll read it.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
It should go pretty quick.
Okay.
I told her size 10.
Yeah,
this one. Smaller feet.
I don't care. No problem. I'll allow it. No, they're going to go before then. I'm going to do this one first because I know what it is.
I know, exactly. Exactly.
You know, every once in a while I have Gil Sadia, Sacramento.
It used to get
some disagree on stuff. And he was like, he was making fun of us. And I was kidding about it. But Gil's funny. Are you making fun of him? I made fun of the Arizona boycotters.
Oh, we're not going to
you know what I said? And then wait a minute.
Oh.
Right? Am I right?
Yeah.
To me? A wimps and wasters.
Oh,
how wimpy is that?
Yeah.
What can you unless I need it? What's that? And then wait a minute. You've been spending time with me. So that's what I was. It was funny. Okay, we're going to call this meeting back to order. Board President's report. I don't have a report. Do you have a report?
Yeah.
Ms. Shoemaker?
I attended a couple of things that were fun. I went to Holland Crest for their career fair, And it was fun because I originally was supposed to put on my legal hat and be the paralegal counterpoint to the attorneys. But unfortunately, one of the politicians lived up to the not quite reliable aspect of some people's perception of politicians. So I ended up putting on my political hat and talking to our students as a school board member. Their questions were interesting. They wanted to know, you know, what I could do about the dress code. And they wanted to know if I could name a school after myself. I said that that might be nice, but no. It would take the majority of the board to allow that to happen. I also was a judge last night at West Coast Talent Show, and they were so cute. You know, you have the little first graders singing Taylor Swift songs, and how can you not help but melt? And other than that, it's been pretty quiet. We, of course, have the graduations coming up, and I'm looking forward to those. That's it.
You ready?
Oh, yeah. I was very busy these last 2 weeks. I attended Hollingcrest's career fair just as an observer. I did see Ms. Shoemaker there, and I was in Mr. X class and a number of other classes. I attended West Cove's volunteer lunch. And I did site visits at the remaining schools in the district. And so these are the ones that I hit: Hollingcrest, Walnut Grove, Merlinda, and California. In addition to that, I also was very pleased with California Scholastic Book Fair that they hosted, where they got sponsors with Nissan. And that was very good. They even had Scholastic executives come in from the South. So that was a very well-attended event. And they even had DJ personalities there as well. I also went to the memorial at Cameron on behalf of the student Jasmine, and where they dedicated Jasmine's garden. So I was in attendance in that. Site visit. I also did a San Jose Edison site visit. I went to Walnut Grove's awards ceremony. I went to Vine Family Fair, Cameron Family Fair. And, yes, I saw Ms. Shoemaker there at the West Cove talent show. So that was a lot of fun. Been busy.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, we're on item number 8. Items from the floor. We have several blue cards. Pauline Nguyen.
Hello. I would like to...
Excuse me for a second. Monica, can you lower the laptop? And
this one?
Or move it.
There.
There, yeah.
That's better. Okay. I'm a parent of... 5 West Covina students in the high school level, middle school level, and also the elementary school level. And I would like to thank your support for the students and the programs that are available to them. And I hope to have your continued support so that when they go on in the upper grades that they can still have these type of programs available, and also for the younger children that they have the opportunity in the future to also support, to also have the opportunity to participate in these type of programs. Because I'm so proud of the accomplishments that they achieved in these type of competitions, and also because of the obesity issue, that you could look at the nutrition programs and the food choices that are available, and also have more physical activity programs like PEs for the elementary school levels. So I just wanted to thank you for your support and to hope to have your continued support for the students in our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Wendy Lau.
Good evening, members of the school board, esteemed superintendent, assistant superintendents, and members of the community. My name is Wendy Lau, and I'm a graduate of West Covina High School, class of 1994. I'm here tonight to speak to you regarding the decision to not renew Mike Gokura's contract as the AP English teacher at West Covina High School next year. They say that to teach is to touch a life, but in Mike Okura's case, this quote only barely scratches the surface. Mike's extensive service to this community as a well-respected and much-beloved educator is unparalleled. He has engaged and mentored hundreds of students throughout the decades and impacted the lives of untold scores of individuals through his caring and compassion, including myself. Not only did Mike teach both my freshman honors English class and my senior AP English class, he has been and continues to be one of my most trusted mentors and valued critics. When I went off to college, I routinely kept in touch with Mike to update him on the status of my education, as well as to ask for much needed information and feedback. When I decided to go to law school, Mike was there for me to cheer me on and good-naturedly poke fun at my chosen profession. Mm-hmm. When I decided to take a year off after law school to substitute in this school district, Mike was there to offer advice and give me the support I needed. When I ended up being Mike's long-term substitute in the spring of 2003, I took on the unenviable task of being asked to fill in for his senior English classes as well as his AVID classes. For anyone who knows Mike, he's a tough act to follow. While the task was difficult at first, it became one of the most memorable and enjoyable learning experiences of my life. I call it a learning experience because I always thought my relationship with Mike was special, that he took time out of his busy schedule to answer my questions and help me. However, after substitute teaching his classes, I realized that that's just who Mike is. His workday doesn't end when the last school bell rings. He keeps in touch with a retinue of former and current students and acts as a teacher, counselor, mentor, guide, and life coach to all of them in one capacity or another. He is an individual who truly cares about who you are and where you're going in life. His passion for English and education has spawned similar sparks in numerous other students, creating the next generation of amazing teachers. But his work doesn't stop there. His roster of former students reads like a veritable who's who, spanning all manner of professions and geographic regions. From attorneys to doctors to engineers to respected community leaders, Mike Okura has influenced the future in more ways than you can imagine. That is why it troubles me to hear that Mike Okura's contract is not being renewed. He is clearly still passionate about teaching and making a difference in people's lives and remains inspirational and relevant to both today's students as well as decades of former students. It is hard to fathom why such an important and valuable resource would not be put to use to enrich our school system as well as the lives of our students. I encourage the school board to investigate this matter and allow Mike to remain as the AP English teacher at West Covina High School. I appreciate your time and attention tonight in allowing me to voice my concerns.
Thank you. Tamara Cruz Herrera.
Hello, my name is Tamara Cruz Herrera, and I'm an alum of West Covina High School, class of 1995. I'm also here tonight to speak to you about the decision to not renew Mike Okura's contract as the senior AP English teacher at West Covina High next year. While we as students appreciate the efforts of all the teachers that played a role in our education and encouraging us to continue that education, there's a special few who truly stand out as having had a formidable impact on our lives. Mike Okura is one of those teachers. His efforts begin in the classroom, instilling a love for reading and encouraging students to pursue their own niche to pursue literature. His effect goes way beyond the classroom. Through his infectious personality and his own inspiring story, he reaches students on a personal level and motivates them to pursue their dreams. When college application time rolls around each year, countless students run to ask Mike Okura for letters of recommendation because they know that he knows them well and will present them in an honest and detailed manner. They also ask him to review their college application essays because he'll give them honest feedback. As an engineer, I can honestly say that my writing and presentation skills were established prior to college. Since I had Mike Okura for both freshman honors English and senior AP English, he provided the foundation for over half of that secondary writing that I received. When I went to USC, I tested out of their first semester writing class and sailed through the second semester composition class. I then chose to pursue literature classes to fulfill my general elective requirements, no doubt a result of the seed sown by Mike, and not exactly the typical choice for an engineer. While I was at West Covina High, Mike also lent his time and knowledge to ensuring that the school continued to graduate exceptional students by providing them the challenges they required in the classroom and opportunities to grow through extracurricular activities. Just in the years that I was there, he was involved on the team to obtain the school's WASC accreditation. He also proposed and helped implement 2-hour class time schedule to provide students with yet another college preparatory environment. When our ASB director resigned my junior year, he was there to fill in and lend his experience to ensure a smooth and quick transition for the students while a permanent replacement was found. As you're probably also aware, he serves as the head football coach and the golf coach, reaching and motivating yet another round of students beyond the classroom. I also know of several students that have selected him as mentor when they chose to enter the teaching profession. I cannot understand why the West Covina Unified School District would choose not to renew the contract of such a successful educator after over 40 years of exceptional service to the school and the district. Instead, I would expect that the years of experience in the classroom, activities, athletics, and administrative support would be an invaluable resource to the school district. I respectfully urge the school board to investigate this matter and find some way to use Mike's enthusiasm and experience in the classroom as long as he is still willing to remain on staff. Thank you for allowing us to speak to you this evening and bring this attention to your matter.
Thank you. Esther Girion.
Good evening. I'm Esther Girion. I've been teaching in this district for almost 30 years, and I've been a member of the Bulldog family for 15. There's a show on cable TV called Clean House. The premise of the show is that people with a tendency to hoard or to allow clutter to overwhelm them are given the opportunity to have a team of expert cleaners and decorators come in, and along the same lines as Extreme Makeover Home Edition, their house is completely cleared of clutter and a total redecoration is afforded them for free. Well, the words clean house seem to be in the air a lot lately around West Covina High School. It seems that the perception of some is that there's too much clutter at the high school, too much hoarding has been going on. The call has gone out for experts to come in and clean house, to rid the school of clutter, and to determine what is being hoarded that could be eliminated. Unnecessary staff members, staff who are not seen to be useful any longer, or pleasing to the eye, or young enough, or vibrant enough, or who it is deemed may cost more than they are worth to keep. These staff members are targeted and then hounded, bargained out of the Bulldog House. After years of usefulness and effectiveness, and despite wisdom and expertise gleaned from years of experience, certain faculty and staff find themselves enduring dreadful scrutiny and constant criticism, nitpicking, erroneous judgment, and pressure to give up and get out. Happily, though, some experts have realized the so-called clutter is not clutter, but useful, beautiful, and still necessary for the continued functioning of the house. Interestingly, the view of one expert, this house is actually warm, friendly, runs smoothly, and has much to recommend it. What foolishness to discard still useful and valuable household treasures, committing them to the degradation of a yard sale. How ill-advised to spread fear and apprehension among the remaining household members who wonder day after day if they will be next. Rather than gutting the house and trashing the treasures, let's recognize their value, polish them, appreciate them, and keep them. And could it possibly be that the wrong house has been targeted?
Okay. Dwight Eck.
Thank you, Mr. Spence and the board. Yes, we have a tremendous Board of Education. And the 7 years that I spent as president of the Teachers Association of West Covina, for whom I speak tonight, was a willing opportunity to serve West Covina and the teachers and counselors of this district. I'll be leaving this position this year, and David Bagey will take over as president, and Joanne Van Eyck will be vice president, and Bob Rulin, who's sitting here in the audience, will be our treasurer still, and Mark Law will be the secretary of our association. But I just want you to know that I put out a very interesting farewell newsletter saying all the accomplishments that we've had in West Covina over the 7 years that I've been able to be president. But leadership isn't about just being in power. It's much more than that. It's about taking the concerns of every constituent that you have. As an elected official of the West Covina Unified School District Teachers Association, I found out the job was much bigger than I thought it would be. As you know, as elected officials, your job is always much bigger than you think it is. So I wanted to thank the Board of Education for working with the Teachers Association over the past 7 years. I think it's been very productive 7 years. We've had a lot of changes, but the changes that we've had in almost every circumstance have been constructive. And I saw these students, our past students, speak tonight, and it's a credit to the teachers of West Covina Unified School District that we have such excellent alumni one of my most outstanding students that I ever had is on the Board of Education, Jessica Shoemaker. The year that she was at Edgewood, she was my outstanding student in social science on the Eagles team. And Mike Spence, an alumni of Edgewood, served as our ASB president when he was there. And Cammie Polis, when I was teaching my third year, Cammie Polis was a senior in 1976. And I just want to say that factoring in the things that we have here in West Covina and the long traditions that we have, that I know that the age factor is not even a criteria for judging anybody in this district on their ability to teach. I know one of the finest educators that I work with in my student teaching experience was over 65 years old. He could have already been retired. But no, he stayed on. And he was the best inspiration for me as a young teacher, knowing that he was able to touch the hearts of every student. His special interest, like mine, is our students. And as we grow up, we learn the accomplishments of our kids are the legacy that all of us have. You as board members, as superintendent, as the leadership team of West Covina, our legacy is only as fine as the young people we teach. And I just want to go out as president of the union saying to you guys, I appreciate all the time that you've given the community, and I want to thank every one of you for the time you spend, and thank you very much for the 7 years. Bye.
Thank you. The approval of agenda and consent items. Is there anyone that wishes to take an item off consent? Okay, I don't think we can put any of these on. Is there a motion? So moved and seconded to approve the agenda and consent items for the regular meeting of June 8, 2010. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, it's approved. Item number five, reconsideration.
Nope.
Three, I'm sorry. Information report. And we have the blue thing here.
Thank you very much. Board members, I'd like to introduce Assistant Superintendent Ellie Valentine.
Good evening. I'm pleased to introduce our Director of Special Education, Cheryl Lawson, this evening to provide you an overview of the program that we have implemented to serve our students with disabilities. This will provide Mrs. Lawson with an opportunity to share some of the initial data from the implementation of READ 180, a program that the board approved last August, as well as some other information.
I was looking back over my slides, and it seems like just yesterday I was speaking, and I looked at the data, and I think it was August 2008. Yep. So it was quite a while ago, and I thought, wow, where did the time go? And I was also excited as I was thinking about all the changes that we made. And all the I'm so pleased with how far we've come. Oops. I'm going to mess this up. Yeah, I wanted to start with the federal legislation because I think that has sort of driven some of the changes we've made. And I'm starting with NCLB and IDEA because those were federal bills that were passed that sort of guided some of the changes that we've had. NCLB was for all students, and IDEA, when they did the revision, made some changes to special education to sort of conform to that. And that pushed us forward, and some of that was making sure that we had teachers that were fully qualified, that we were using state-adopted textbooks, that we had research-based interventions, that students were educated in the least restrictive environment, that parents had opportunities to participate. So all of these were things that we had been incorporating and continued to push forward. The state performance plan indicators were state indicators, targets that they gave us, and these were things that they asked us to meet. And I'll share a little bit about that as we move forward. But these are targets that I see every year, and they give us an end goal to shoot for in terms of, different aspects. I think there's about 13 of them. I'll share a few of them with you. So that was, okay. So we talked about models, and I'll show you the model that we had before. But what we've learned from research, there's been a lot of research that's been conducted in special education, we've learned from research that inclusion, I know you've heard a lot about inclusion, it's fully including special ed students in the general ed environment. We've learned that including students and also having pull-out services when needed are the most effective. So it's a combination of that. It's also incorporating accommodations and modifications of the program, providing assistive technology when appropriate, and related supports and services. So some of this is not new. This was our old model, and some of you in the audience may be familiar with how this worked. We had special day classes who had, most of them had a teacher and a paraprofessional in them. It was a separate classroom off somewhere. Students were educated totally separately. Students were mainstream, maybe for PE and elective. Most of the instruction was not with grade level material, so it was lower level books, or sometimes it was just supplemental materials, sometimes it was materials that were no longer used in the regular classroom, and so they were sort of handed down, like hand-me-down clothes to special education. So that created a great divide between general education and special education. And I know on it was often difficult for some of the general education teachers to identify who the special education students were or who the staff was. It was just kind of two separate worlds. We also, sorry. We also had a research specialist program, and that was a teacher and a paraprofessional. It was also in a separate classroom, and the students were pulled out again from the general education program. Often they were tutored on their classwork. So they would be pulled out of class, they were tutored. Sometimes the students would bring their worksheets that the teacher or assistant would help them with that, and we used some supplementary materials. But what we found is when the students were pulled out, they were missing a certain amount. And then what I kept hearing was, as soon as they went back in the classroom, they felt like they had to catch up with what they missed and complete what they needed help on. So it was the students were very frustrated by that. I don't know what this is so sensitive to my touch. Okay, so our current model, what we've done is shift students into general education. So we've started with the least restrictive environment. We've tried to put as many students in general education for whom that was appropriate. So that was our starting base. And then the amount of service those students needed to be pulled out was discussed rather than the other way around. What the students ended up having in the general education classroom then was the standards-based instruction with a highly qualified teacher, because that was what was in general education. We instituted the co-teaching, and that was a special education teacher teaching with a general education teacher. And what we found was that was forming sort of a collaboration that was so beneficial on both sides, because the general education teacher was learning how to adapt and accommodate special education students, and then the special education teachers were learning what standards-based curriculum actually looked like. So then it wasn't any longer sort of a tutoring situation. They actually were learning how to teach the subject matter appropriately. And students were pulled out of general education just for the part of the day that they required. And what we shifted to was research-based intervention. So that was a big change. Okay, at the elementary level, what we did, and this year was the first year we did this, we actually decreased our special day classes from 8 to 5. And that allowed us to increase resource specialist teachers to be full-time in each elementary school, because prior to that, the RSP teachers were sharing. They were split between two schools. And at this point, we could have a full-time person, and that person was sort of the professional at the elementary site that could provide guidance for all of the special education students there and the teachers. We've been training the paraprofessionals to support the students in the regular classroom. We have implemented READ 180, which was the Scholastic curriculum, the System 44, and the Reading Mastery. So those are all research-based interventions that we've been using. And then we've incorporated modifications, accommodations, assistive technology. We've tried to have IEP teams look more carefully at what supports students could benefit from. At the middle school level, what we had was a combination of general education classes that were either co-taught with a general education teacher and a special education teacher, or aide-supported. So there was an aide in there with a general education teacher. We also have pull-out classes in English, math, social science, and science, depending on the school site, and a directed study class, which is really a class where students, when they're in general education, get extra support for the work that they have. And then the special education teachers were aligned with the subject matter competence. So we have English teachers teaching English and math teachers teaching math, aligned more with the curriculum. At the high school, it's a similar situation. The students are able to be pulled out in periods. They also have the opportunity to be in the general education class in a co-taught situation or with a paraprofessional. And I'm not sure why Holland Crest ended up on this slide. That was a boo-boo. But anyhow, at Holland Crest, that kind of belongs back in the middle school slide. But Holland Crest is a selected site where all four subject areas are, students have the availability of pull-out sessions. I can't say enough about how the high school has progressed with this. We've gone from being very separate to being just fully included. I mean, the teachers really feel a part of that department. They're aligned with the department. There have been a lot of collaborations going back and forth. We have general education teachers that are always at IEPs and have good input. They have suggestions because they've learned how to do that from the collaboration. And also our level of instruction has greatly improved because special education teachers are now in those general education classrooms seeing what the curriculum is like. We've aligned the curriculum with the state standards. We have greater monitoring by the students, by the case carriers. Our case carriers work diligently to make sure students are passing their classes. We have the directed study periods at the high school where the teacher and two paraprofessionals are in there. Students are coming in with their work. They're making sure that they get the work from the regular classroom and they're able to keep the students up to speed with assignments, research projects. We have a counselor who's assigned just to special education students this year. That has been so beneficial. She knows every single one of those students, and she goes to all their IEPs, and she's able to clearly articulate, you know, what courses they need and what their program is going to look like. We have a transition specialist who attends all of the IEPs and works with the case carriers on developing appropriate transition plans. And we also have the CRTC program, which is a work experience program for non-diploma students. And initially, I think the students were a little hesitant about it, but they love it. They're able to earn money. They're able to be in a work environment. They feel very good about it, and I just hear very positive things from those students. Okay, some of the measures of our success are a parent survey, and I'll share those results with you. We have the state targets, and I can let you know how we're doing with that. We have the academic performance index, so we don't speak in letters, as we sometimes do.
You mean like CRTC? What does that mean?
Community Rehabilitation Training Center.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So the API is the Academic Performance Index, and AMOs are Annual Measurable Objectives. READ 180 is the Scholastic Intervention Program. We have student recognition, progress reports, and grades. So on the parent survey, this was a survey that was required because this is the year we go through the state review. And in tallying those responses by parents, and there were a number of areas, we found that 220 out of 227 parents felt that the district made a good faith effort to assist their child with achieving goals and objectives, which I thought was pretty remarkable. These are the state targets, and this needs a little bit of explaining, but this has to do with the percentage of time out of general education. So what the state wants us to do is push in more, and you can see where we are is the top set of figures. So students that are pulled out less than 21% are 66% of our students. The state target for 2010 on that is 62. So we're actually exceeding the state target in that. The students that are pulled out more than 60% for us right now are 21%. The state would like us to get below 18%. So we still have more work to do in that area, and that is getting more students in general ed more of the time. This is our growth on API. In 2006 and 2007, there were 15 points from the previous year. The next year, we grew 9 points. This previous year, we grew 33 points, which I think that was a direct correlation to how much more time students spent in general ed and how much more time we provided the research-based interventions. These are the AMOs, and you can see in 2007 we were at 19%. So these are the number of special education students who score proficient or advanced, which I think is a pretty tough measure because, you know, that's a challenge. And the target is the 45% and, you know, 45% in English language arts and math. But you can see we've been steadily approaching that, and so we're now at the 33% on English language arts and 37% in math. And this is the Read 180 data. We're really excited about Read 180, although it hasn't been without its technological challenges, and we're still working on that part of it. But the students, and this is based on Lexile scores, but we measured 125 students because those were the students that started in quartile one. Some of the students have been added as it goes along, so we didn't elect to include those students. But you can see the growth in elementary has been almost 100 Lexile points, and that was just the average. Secondary has been a little bit fewer, but I believe it's harder for them to move up because of the difference between Lexiles at that age. And then you can see the average growth for elementary and secondary for the students who showed growth. And this, the student success, I was so excited because so many of our students, special ed students, are being acknowledged for their achievements. And these are just some of the awards that were handed out actually at the high school, and I was just so impressed with how our students were recognized, and sometimes by the general ed setting. It wasn't all a special ed award, and so these were just some of the things. We had 32 seniors earn diplomas this year, 2 seniors earned certificates. And these are the things that we're working on. Behavior supports, that's a huge thing that we really are attempting to tackle for the coming year because we feel like that's important for schools to understand how to positively provide supports for students with behavior. We also need more professional development for general education. We need to continue to work with research-based intervention. Response to intervention is another thing that needs to be developed so that we'll be able to intervene early for students, avoiding the needs for assessment later. And then we're working on a procedures manual so that we'll all be on the same page in terms of how to proceed. So that concludes.
Questions? Kimmy?
that at the elementary school level, you talked about the research-based interventions for language arts. Do you have some for math?
What we're using is the, right now we're using the adaptive, but as far as a specific intervention, we don't at this point. Something is other than the orchard or some of those behavioral programs.
And are those sufficient?
I think that's an area that we need to look into. Okay.
And you and I had talked about assistive technology, and I believe that it was throughout the grade levels, but you only have it on the elementary level slide.
That was probably an error.
Okay. I assume so.
Yeah.
And you had talked about Hall and Crest, and
I don't know how that got mixed up on the slide.
Can you just elaborate on the difference then? Why was... I know we had talked about it, but
okay.
What was the difference in between Hall and Crest and the other middle schools?
Hall and Crest actually has one additional special education teacher, and with that additional teacher, we are able to do pull-up studies for all subject areas. So the students that require that intense level of support can receive that at Hall and Crest. It's not a huge number of students.
And then all of the students that are in need would go to Hall and Crest then of the extra pull-up?
If they needed that intensive level of support.
Okay. Because I know you were saying you tried to get them into their home school.
Right.
But under those circumstances, they would go to Hall and Crest.
Right.
The CRTC program,
mm-hmm.
How is that related to workability, or is it completely different?
It's partially funded by workability. It is a work experience for them. I'm not sure entirely how it's different.
Okay.
I can tell you, I'm not sure how it's different as far as the funding portion. I can tell you how it operates differently. This is something that we fund for a whole year for students, whereas the workability is a certain number of hours, and then the employer has an option to take them out. So it's different in that regard. The students have the opportunity to go for the entire year.
And where do they go for the CRTC?
They actually go to a facility. That's what it's called, is the California Rehabilitation Training Center.
It's not IRS, then, the Innovative Rehabilitation Services. It's
no,
a different one.
No.
Okay.
It's actually on Vincent or Sith. I've been up there, but it's a facility that...
When you were talking about the special education participation percentage of time out of the general education arena, you said that that we serve 60% of the students. I mean, 21% of the students were still being served in pullout, and we wanted it to be 18%. Does that include our students that are in the county program? So this is just the students. We have more students, but we're serving them in a different environment. It would be
more than 60% of the day.
And then that doesn't count in our count, then, the students that we send out to county programs.
No.
The academic growth, you talked about RTI and the improvement. How many of the students got the RTI, the response to intervention, before they were in special ed?
When you said I talked about the RTI.
No, okay, on the slide,
uh-huh.
And it's on page 7, it says API growth.
Oh,
and
okay.
You said a lot of that was contributed from the RTI and the regular classroom experience. And I was wondering if you were looking at it even before the student was in special education and they got some RTI.
What I was referring to in that was the research-based interventions. As we've increased the level of rigor and going more toward the research-based and included them more in general ed, that's
okay.
What I think that's attributed to. But RTI is another part of it that we're working on, and I think the schools are becoming progressively more astute in in looking at interventions and what interventions they can do. So it's really been brought to their awareness that it's not just we assess, we need to look at what interventions are taking place.
On the 32 students that earned their diplomas, how many of them, if you know offhand, had special accommodations?
I don't know offhand.
Okay. I was just curious.
You mean on the case you had?
That was all of my questions.
Mr. Cox?
I just have a quick comment. I've been doing this for 15, 16 years now, and I've over the period of time, and this is a tremendously difficult subject area, and I appreciate everything that you do and your staff and everybody does with respect to benefits of special education. But I've also grown to know, on the parent side, parents with children of special needs also take a tremendous active participation in their children's education. So I was particularly pleased to see, now I'm not sure of the more or less convoluted presentation that you've presented here, but it, the fact is that out of the parent survey, 220 out of 270 indicated their approval of the programs and their satisfaction with the progress that their children have made through our programs, and I think that's extraordinary.
Thank you. I was very pleased with
that. Yeah, because that's a tough crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a tough crowd, and rightfully so. Rightfully so.
Well, I think they know we're really working on behalf of their students. Mm-hmm. We're making every effort, so we're not perfect, but we certainly are trying.
Yeah.
And I would second that from Mr. Cox. I had a question, and it dealt with, you mentioned here RTI developed a target intervention for the early primary grades, and I was just curious what you thought the impact of the elimination of the PIP program would be then.
I love the PIP program. I really love it. It's hard to say what the impact is. I mean, it was at three schools when
mm-hmm.
most recently, and there were some constraints in rewriting the grant. I mean, it was just some challenges. So I don't know. I mean, that's a tough one because that's very close to my heart.
Because it seems like that was counterproductive. I know I was in the minority on that, but it seems like that's counterproductive if we're trying to reach early primary grades. That was something that that had an impact at the early primary grades.
Right. There were some constraints. We weren't allowed to rewrite for the PIP for that model.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
No, I just want to say thank you for the report. This is an area that I'm learning more and more about, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you very much. Item number 5, reconsideration. Is there a motion to reconsider? Okay. It was moved by Ms. Miranda Jimenez. Is there a second?
Jessica.
Oh, you can't move it. Well, now, someone who is in the majority side has to move the reconsideration.
Oh, then, okay.
That's why I thought it was from that side. That's why I thought it was from there. So it's been moved? It's been seconded? Are you seconding it then? Okay, it's been moved and seconded to reconsider the motion to approve the agreement with TOC and the West Community School District. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'd like to comment if I may.
Okay. You want it? We'll let them comment and then we'll do the vote again, I guess.
I should let you know. I intend to actually vote to support the ratification of this contract.
The reconsideration first.
Oh, I'm sorry. The reconsideration? Oh, I'm sorry. Then yes. Go ahead, vote.
Okay. All in favor of voting to reconsider the motion to approve?
I never get that correct.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Nay. It's approved 4-1. Now there's a motion. There was a motion made to approve that was defeated. So that's currently what's on the floor.
I'll make a comment.
Okay, Mr. Cox, would you like to make a comment?
Thank you. I do intend to. If this is a motion in favor, I do intend to vote for this. My original intent in voting in opposition is because that I didn't believe that both parties had negotiated this contract and consider. Quite honestly, what's in best interest of the teachers of West Covina. We entered into a contract on May 16th of 2000 and, excuse, yeah, about that, May of 2005 or 6 to enter into an agreement that went from 2005 and ended in 2008. Since then, the teachers have, in effect, been working without a contract. That contract expired. However, on May 16th, that contract, May 16th of 2008, that contract was extended, portions of that contract were extended, with a raise going into effect July 1st of 2007 of 2.5%. Certain provisions of that contract are to expire in 2011, and this, in effect, this article extended, or excuse me, this extension extended that contract through 2009, which was certainly appropriate with the provisions. I don't necessarily agree with that process, but that's what happened. That took to 2009. 2010, our teachers have been working, excuse me, to 2009. Through this year, 2010, our teachers have not been working with a contract, except to the extent that Article 2, I believe, maybe it's 25. I think it's later. In effect, says if there's no contract, the current contract continues. And I know that that is not beneficial to the teachers or any consistency whatsoever. And now we're asking to, they're asking to extend it on to 2011, again, without any substantive changes to the contract that we entered into back in 2005. I hope that that's true. I hope that everybody sees that you know, over the years we've worked hard on the contract and that will continue, and we don't need to make major modifications. But I do want to point out that our teachers have been without a raise for over 3 years, since July 1st of 2007, so fiscal year 2008, 9, is that how that works? 8, 9, 10, which takes us out through June of 2011 without raises. And I was hoping that, I'm not saying funds would have been available, but I think that the conversation needed to be shared, and I think as will be information that will become more evident had people done their due diligence in this process, that things maybe could have been different. But since the association chose not to do that, and we've agreed to a binding contract to extend through 2011, I will support that contract.
Okay, anything else on this motion? Okay, there's a motion on the floor from... Okay. Mr. Maker, that's why I asked.
Just like to thank the teachers union for understanding the difficult financial times we're in and agreeing year by year to extend the contract and understanding that you are still under a contract by extending the contract. We can only hope that next year is better. You know, everybody would love to give raises. All I can say is, yes, we haven't had the money since 2007 to give you a raise, but unlike other districts laying teachers off and freezing step and column, we haven't had to do that. So thank you again for being good partners with the district.
Okay, anything else on this item? Okay, the previous motion from two board meetings ago is on the table to approve the MOU. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Nay. It's approved 4-1. Appointment administrative position, item number 6. It's the previous motion from two meetings ago. So whoever, I think it was Ms. Shoemaker and then Mrs. Polis that moved that.
Okay.
Item number 6, appointment of administrative position.
Board members, it is my pleasure and privilege to ask for your recommendation. I mean, not your recommendation, your approval of my recommendation. I don't want you recommending. I want you to approve my recommendation of what I believe will be a great addition to the West Covina Unified School District Cabinet. Mrs. Dawn Baston is an MBA. She is fully qualified for the position with extensive experience, and I think we will be very fortunate if you approve her appointment tonight. I would like to welcome her. She is here, and as soon as you approve her, you can introduce yourselves to her.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved by Mrs. Polis, second by Mr. Cox. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved 5-0.
Welcome.
Okay, we're on item number 10, information report.
Item number 10, I'd like to call on Mr. Frutos, who would give you a brief informational report. Mr. Frutos, on Title I, distribution of funds and analysis of the recommendation for 2010-2011 school year.
You guys want one? Or you want one?
That would be nice. Thank you.
Had a couple of questions, and in the past we've had some requests for information regarding how we allocate some of our categoricals, and tonight we're going to be dealing with Title I. As you know, Title I is one of those federal categoricals that work under the federal, let's call it a budget calendar, and if you remember, we are a July to June calendar. And we have to submit a budget that includes all the categoricals, including those that are federal, that work on the more of a September-October year-to-year budget. So how do we fund Title I? Well, when we give you the budget, and I was working with the superintendent today on our budget for 10-11, we're almost done with it, and it has to include all the categoricals, including the federal. So what we're going to do tonight is a brief description of how we fund and allocate Title I, both at the district level and with our schools. Basically, there are two ways that we can qualify our schools for Title I. One is a school qualification. If you do a review of how schools are qualified under free and reduced, there would be two schools in our district that wouldn't qualify, which would mean that the funding would go to the other schools. We have another choice, which is pupil qualification. That makes all our schools qualify based on free and reduced, and that is the formula that we have used at least in the last few years since I've been here. Our funds in our districts are allocated based on the eligible elementary pupils, and elementary for us means schools that can be, for example, K-5, K-6, K-8. So how does it work over the last few years? Since 2004-2005, our federal allocation has been reduced based on two different things. One, the allocation by the feds has decreased over time. And two, every year we have carryovers in some areas, and that's not necessarily a good thing. We always talk about how our balances are strong. With some of the federal funding, as you know, if you don't spend it, it can actually be taken back. So having large carryovers is not necessarily the best idea. So this chart is very important because it shows a significant decrease. But some of it is actually a reduction in funding. Some of it is a reduction in carryover funds from prior year. So I gave you a little explanation. For an average over the last 6 years, we've received about $189 per student from the mean, meaning from the mean for the current year as we go into 10-11, we're off by about 39%. Now, if you remember our state budgets, we've been working over the last couple of years with reductions in the 20% or more. This shows you that for a typical school, there is a reduction, some of it carryover, some of it allocation. Now, this is a complicated chart, but I'm going to try to make it easy. Let's go through the middle first. Those lines were straight recently, but that's okay. Our eligible students, which are our elementary students, they're straight in the paper?
Yes.
Oh, good. From our eligible population, we come up with an elementary number of dollars per pupil. That becomes the Title I allocation for every school. Now, I'm going to take you to the outsides to do a typical example, and on the next chart, we're going to go to our actual numbers. Our annual allocation hovers at around 825. I just looked at the numbers for next year, and it's very close to 850, something like that. If we have an average of 6,500 eligible pupils throughout the district, that comes to a per pupil amount of about $126. Last year it was actually 125 something. If you look at a typical school that might have 350 students at that allocation, it comes to about $44,000. So that is the formula that we have used that actually allows us to do that second way, not by school but by pupil. So how do we do that? Well, we allocate again to elementary schools at about $125 per pupil. Our distribution amount last year, and we're hoping it'll be a little higher next year, is about $812,000. We used to be able to have counts at different times. Now it's been standardized on CBES, which, as you know, is October. Let's say we have 6,471 students. That gives us a fixed amount of $125.48 for each one of our pupils. These are our schools. Now, it's a little bit of a complicated chart, and the first thing I'm going to explain is the line, because normally we don't do this. As you know, the board has now has been working with the administration on the reconfiguration of California and WESCO. The reason why you see those lines is that next year, based on the way those students are configured, you might actually see the funding of WESCO go to California and the funding of California go to WESCO, just because of the way they're configured. So if you see this chart next year, you might see those two numbers actually reversed. So as you can see, some of our sites have significant carryovers, and I'm just going to pick on Merlinda for a second because they have the largest one. They went into last year's with $28,700 in carryover. They received an allocation of $125,000, which gives them a budget of $154,000. If you look at a different school like Vine with a different population, no carryover starting the year, and an allocation of $29,000, and that is the total amount. Now, if you look at the bottom, you see the carryover from 1 year to the next, $131,000. That number is a concern to us. Every year we review it, make sure we don't go beyond what is acceptable, both for our audit and for any type of federal retrieval initiative to take the money back. But the allocation of $832,000 is a concern because it has declined over time. Now, if you look at that number for next year, we expect the amount to be a little bit higher than $832,000. I was just doing some calculations the other day with numbers that we received from instruction, and it might be as high as $900,000 or anywhere around there. So as you see us present the budget within the next few weeks, you'll see us give you some of those numbers embedded in the budget. But the proportion won't change. And finally, the funding allocation of Title I, how do we use it? Well, the majority of the funding goes directly to our schools, and that is that amount. That gray is the equivalent of that, think gray, purple, whatever that number color is. About 74% of every dollar that we receive goes directly to the school's allocation. Another 17% goes to professional development and instructional materials that go to our schools. And finally, as with any other of our categorical programs, there's an indirect and support cost for Title I for the last, believe it was 3 years, has averaged between 9.5 down to 9.15, last year's being 9.27, so it's right in the middle of the average of the last 3 years. And that is how we allocate the funding for Title I for our schools.
What was the formula we used in budgeting this in 2008-2009?
The same formula.
In 2008-2009, then what was it that the board changed going into the 2009-2010 budget?
Actually, the formula, this is the second year, I believe, that we used this formula.
Is it the second year that we used the formula? What was the formula then before the 2008-2009?
Before 2008, the formula included the total population, including the secondary students, in the allocation. And the reason why we don't do that anymore is that the flexibility provisions of other programs, like SIP, have made that funding more beneficial to go to the secondary schools. Proportionally, the same amount of Title I then has gone out of the Title I allocation for secondary and go to elementaries. That was the big change, if I remember correctly, 2 years
ago. Okay, and that was before 2008, 2009? Or that was?
You know, I'll double check on that, but I'm pretty sure the change, and I'm looking at LEC, just for it, that it, we changed it in 2008, 2009?
Wait, sure, what year?
To this new formula? 2 years ago, right?
I think so. I'm not sure exactly when this formula started.
I think it was 07, 08, but...
Okay. And so previously...
we don't have the data here.
But yeah, exactly. We don't have it here.
But there was a
change. Was a change, and that's what I want to talk about. So I'm trying to focus in on what that change was and what that impact was. Because I remember when we changed it, what it did was it reduced dramatically the allocation at two of our schools and shifted that money to other school sites.
Well, actually, if we...
If I remember right, from what they were getting, we don't have that number here, what they were getting in that previous year.
Actually, that's correct. Two things happened, though. Whether we had adopted the new formula or simply fund based on our entire population, those two schools would have been affected similarly. What I did the other day, just running numbers with the past, I started looking, what if we hadn't done these formulas? And all we had done is grab the allocation and just, without taking into consideration SIP or elementaries, do the same thing for all our schools. And what you would have seen is actually at the elementaries, the per pupil go below 125.
Do you have that, that I can look at that?
I can probably send it to you later. It's not a problem. I can have it in a spreadsheet that I can send it to you.
Okay, because I'd like to see what that order, I mean, that's not what's in here. I appreciate this information, but we don't have the information from before this allocation, because what I was concerned about when we did that, and it may have been actually 2 years ago, coming back to me, you know, was especially with Vine, it ended up dramatically reducing Vine's allocation. And, of course, at that time, Vine was our second highest performing school. And then, you know, we shifted all those resources. I mean, when you looked at where the money was going to other school sites, and then, you know, Vine's no longer our second performing school. And so I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe it's because we shifted resources. You know, maybe there's other schools that need more resources. I understand that. But there's other funds that we can find that in lottery or, you know, other ways to find that supplemental stuff rather than redistributing, you know, funds that were generated by kids, you know, at Vine School. And so, you know, that's why I need to I'd really like to see that formula and that change.
If we had known that's what you wanted, Mr. Spence, we would have provided it, but you just said you wanted to see our proposed Title I. But let me
have another meeting at our budget that we can talk about it briefly.
Let me just add a couple of things. We can also add another presentation in where we show the lottery money that goes to each of the schools based on their ADA.
Yeah, some of it's on ADA, correct?
You know, but no, that's not the way it works. What happens is when students come in and principals look at their budgets, we make a lot of programmatic decisions that are different from a charter school. So there's a whole different mechanism of categoricals bunched together for a school that's non-charter to a school that is charter. So what the elementary and secondary principals did is when all the money was on the table, and it could have been 08, 09, when all the money was on the table, they looked at it in terms of program and how they would align their monies to their needs. And it was decided at the time and presented to the board that the elementary schools wanted to have the Title I, which the board allows. And then the SIP, they don't have SIP anymore.
Right.
That SIP, all except charter, except charter schools. Mm-hmm. Charter schools kept SIP, charter schools kept lottery, charter schools keep all of their categoricals. So if you want to see how money is allocated in terms of categoricals, including other things such as lottery, we can do that too.
Okay. Oh,
that'd be good.
If I just one brief comment. In this chart, you look at the total distribution amount, and this is the example that I mentioned that I could gladly send to the superintendent and to the board. The 812 wouldn't change. That's the total distribution amount. The 6471 is the number of students at what we're calling elementary level K-8. So if I add the secondary students, that 6471 will probably be, what, 9,000? Somewhere around there. So the per student amount will go down. And that's what I was trying to explain. If we do the distribution based on the entire population, those schools that are Vine, let's use Vine as an example, their amount will actually decrease. What will happen then is that the SIP funding will be available for distribution differently, reducing the flexibility. So I just want, it's a really small example, but that's what I was talking about.
Right, and okay. Well, I'd like to see how that formula then would have applied.
Sure.
So for we'll have to get that to you in writing because the the next meeting will be a budget presentation.
I got you. Any other questions? I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, I.
Any questions?
Yes, this is all new to me, so thank you. Okay, so you what I heard is that if we this 6,500, I'm looking at page two, or I guess slide four, does not include the high school or the middle school. Is that correct? Because you
correct.
Said if it does, it would be approximately 9,000.
I'm just throwing a number. It might be a different, but it'll be a lot higher than 6,400.
Okay. All right. So then the amount, the 126, is actually not the federal amount. This is what we generate based on the percentages that we're doing, right?
No.
Because the federal government gives us 825,000 total, and that's all 9,000 students?
That's the K-8 eligible.
That's only K-8.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's let Mr. Frutos respond.
The total allocation amount, what we receive for distribution, does encompass K-12. So picture our entire district population, and for distribution, minus the amounts that are central, we get $850,000.
Right.
That's why that example.
Right.
We don't distribute to K-12. We distribute to K-8, if you will, with the caveat that K-8 means the one school that has K-8, the rest are the elementaries. So the middle schools, which also have 8th grade, don't get funding. The reason why we do that is that there's another pot of funding, that's SIP. That's more suited to the secondaries. So it's kind of a dollar for dollar. But if we were to go back and say, grab the 825,000 and divide them by the K-12 population, the amount per student will decline.
Okay.
And we wouldn't get the SIP.
And the SIP will have to be distributed differently.
Oh, the SIP would be distributed.
Exactly.
So how? No, so it would be. So the SIP would be distributed to every school.
Well, the SIP would be distributed to those secondaries that that right
in
now.
In addition to that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, there are schools that we have no control over because they're block rented or whatever. That's a little different.
Okay. And SIP, I'm sorry, stands for?
School and Program.
Program.
But I think it's actually not called, isn't the school library? School library something.
Mm-hmm.
Reading
program
or something. School library. They changed.
And it's a federal program.
Yeah.
It's a federally funded program that comes through the state.
Okay. And that's what our middle schools get and our high school.
In lieu
of Title I. Okay. And the middle schools would be Walnut Grove, Edgewood, and Hollingcrest, right?
You got that right.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Ms. Schmaker?
I wanted to ask a clarifying question. When we approved this before, it was my understanding that we were doing this so that a school like Vine or San Jose Edison, which does not have the poverty level to be entitled to get Title I funding, we were setting it up so that the money was following the student. Is that correct?
That was the discussion that we had at the time. What we were trying to do was, and I'm recalling a 2-3-year-old conversation, depending on the year that this happened.
Yeah.
what we were trying to do was two things. One, we didn't want to lose funding. One of the challenges that happened, and I forget if it was 07, 08, there was a proposal from the feds to distribute money only a certain way, that there was no local discretion. And this helped us to get all the schools qualified. The second thing was the flexibility provisions on SIP that only benefit certain schools. So it kind of did the best of both worlds, trying to have, I guess, the best dollar follow the student. Because at the secondary, it's the same dollar, mm-hmm. just a better dollar if it's SIP, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And thank you. I'm sorry, I have another question based on that. Okay, so based on what Ms. Shoemaker just said then, there's two schools that would not qualify, you're saying, would have been Vine and Edison? And if so, why? Because their free and reduced isn't high enough?
Think of another
or?
Formula. The formula has a free and reduced proportion. And assume for a second that for our district, our free and reduced is X percent. If you qualify by school, those schools that fall below the district-wide average, and it's just like in some of our other funding. If you remember when we were talking about ARA, one of the concerns of the other way of funding the feds is that four of our schools wouldn't qualify. Race to the top. We don't qualify because we don't average up. So for us, the concern was, do we have that methodology, or do we try to do it so that every student that qualifies gets
their money?
Okay.
So the feds don't say at 50% we consider Title I. The feds look at what the district averages
to qualify a school.
To qualify. Okay. I think that's okay. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Look forward to seeing that. If we could get that next week or something,
yes.
Some of that would be helpful.
We will
thanks.
Get it too.
Mm-hmm. Days to Remember. They have June 15th and June 22nd, but I think there's something going on tomorrow at the high school where I expect to see many of you.
You know, just for purposes
right.
of how the board wants us to put calendar, Monica tries very hard to give it to you in advance, but
right.
not too much in advance where
right.
people forget, right? So we've had a couple conversations at the board table about, well, you left somebody out. But
well, I wasn't doing that for that. I was just reminding that we need to be there at 6 o'clock.
I know.
That's
but
I
want to make a point about what you want on the agenda. Okay. Do you want us to continue to put it every time? Now, you also got a letter from Mr. Goutreau saying where you should be, where you should park.
Did
you
I didn't get a letter.
Who's in our board? Yeah. In our board. Same place, same time.
But it's the same. I'm going to park in the same place. I always park. Yes. And have them tell me.
Okay. Is it in your packet?
Yes.
I didn't get one.
Yes.
Yes.
So are you asking? Yes, it's in our packet.
Okay.
Well, no, it's not in the. It's not in my packet.
Oh, it's not in Mr. Spence's packet.
It was
oh,
in an
oh, yeah. Okay.
So
no, I do have it.
She's talking about the Friday packet, not what's in front of you now. You got it at your homes on Friday. Okay. So here's the thing. 6:30, park by the M building, right? Graduation begins at 7. You're welcome to be there as early as 6. There will be some activities in the cafeteria, Bulldog Cafe. What else?
Fallen Days
then
Promotions.
Then we have Coronado, too.
And Coronado, yeah.
Okay, so you have those calendars?
As to your question, I'm fine with anything that happens in the 2 weeks between meetings being on here. As long as our district website stays updated so that we're aware of events.
Okay, is that fine?
The general public.
Yeah, so that's
okay.
fine.
Thank you.
I'm the only one who likes a month out? Okay.
But you could see it on the calendar in the
well, actually, graduation's usually set a year out. So we have it with the calendars out 2 years, so those dates we got.
Okay, good. Then I'll get next year's.
So those dates we
in
got.
My calendar, then.
You know what might be helpful to you, too, is we get the major events in a calendar in September.
Okay.
And when we
okay.
go to the back-to-school luncheon, and then everything's laid out. And you may not have gotten that because you were on the board. You go to that meeting in August.
Yes.
Oh,
the calendar
yeah, that's true.
Book.
Yes.
That's true.
Okay, thank you.
And that has everything. So you'll have it a year.
Yeah, thank
not
you.
Anything else?
Functions.
This meeting's adjourned at 8:30.